from being at ease, standing at ease on the work session on Senate Bill 5505, Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Legislative Fiscal Office has read to us revised budget note 2. Representative Johnson now moves budget note 2 as revised. Are there any objections? Seeing and noting none, so ordered. And we recognize Senator Hannan, the full complement from the Senate, and the full complement of the House is here to be able to pass this now. And Representative Johnson now moves the approval of budget for the Board of Chiropractic Examiners as modified and amending line 5 of Senate Bill 5505 to $864,111. Are there any objections? Noting none, so ordered. And finally, Representative Johnson now moves a motion to send House Bill 5038 as amended. 5505 as amended to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
Senator, just one quick question. Is this a fee increase?
No, this is not a fee increase, sir. This is a this is the budget bill for the Board of Chiropractic Examiners.
I know. Does it contain a fee increase?
This one does not. The fee increase was increased and included in another bill.
Okay.
Senator.
All right.
You're not in voting on a fee increase.
Thank you.
All right.
Don't want to wreck my reputation.
No fee increases here, sir. However, we are spending the full CSL, pretty close to the full CSL. Oh, leave us just short of the CSL, I believe. How close does it leave us?
Actually,
it's a little bit over the CSL, sir.
$50,000. Well, it's about $50,000 over the 9901 estimated, and it's about $34,000 more than the 9901.
Okay. Representative Johnson does move that we send Senate Bill 5505 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Seeing and noting none, so ordered. Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here, and we recognize Senator Hannan and Senator Yee back in giving us a full slate of the Senate, and carrying it to full will be Representative Johnson. Carrying it to the Senate will be Senator Yee, and carrying it to the House will be Representative Johnson. Senator Yee.
Thank you for the pleasure of carrying a fee bill.
The budget bill, and they did get your notes in, your budget note in.
The work group.
We will now close.
We did it the way you
want. We will now close the work session on House Bill 5505. And we'll have just about 30 minutes more to hear. Let's put our papers away, please. Thank you all for your participation. I know that you had other things that were drawing you in different directions. Thank you, Rick, for the time that you've taken. Well, you're going to have to ask Representative Ringo that now. I don't know when he's coming. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
4 o'clock out of here. I think it would be appropriate for you to do it. And it's important that at least 2 House members, I get you there.
I'm going to be there.
We'll both be there. So. No, no one from there. We're just going to bring, we're going to have 2 House members, and that's why I want to make sure. So, thank you, Rick.
Yes, sir.
Now that we've eviscerated that last group, who was next on our
agenda?
Let's see. We'll come back into a public hearing on Senate Bill 5510.
Mr. Chair, if you would like me to pick up where I left off, I'd be happy to try. The point at which we left off was Representative Johnson's question, which I can come back to. But let me explain for the record one of the purposes of being here today, and that is to present to you the letter from the Community Development Forum. And, Mr. Chair, if you'll recall, and after the 97 session, when there was some concern about the direction of economic development, the legislature asked that there be convened an interim committee to look at the way economic development was delivered, and that was convened under the leadership of Economic Development Commission Chairman Brett Wilcox, and included a number of members of the legislature, as well as cities, counties, ports, special districts, and partners. We spent nearly a year. I represented the counties in that effort, and it was known as the New Directions Report when it came back to the legislature in the 99 session. And basically what we attempted to do was to take a more coordinated view toward economic development and work in a fashion that incorporated other elements of community development besides pure economic development. And the best way I can explain how that works is to give a personal example from Sherman County. We had been working for a number of years to attract John Deere dealerships, which had been absent from our county for about 50 years. And a number of us run John Deere equipment, and we were having to go to Hermiston to get our parts. And it appeared to be a good opportunity for John Deere. So we did, in fact, get their interest, and they agreed to locate satellite sales service center near Wasco. However, there were a couple of problems with the proposal. Number one, the site that they chose was just on the outside edge of the urban growth boundary, which meant that we needed to expand the urban growth boundary in order to provide them sewer and water. So there was also the problem of the cost of the sewer and water. There was also a problem with access to the highway, Highway 206. There was also a problem with the sizing of the pipes that went there, like, and the cost of those pipes. So now you've got four state agencies. Had we not been working together in the Lower John Day as a regional community solutions team with all the state agencies and having a relationship with all those state agencies, I don't think we would have located that facility that sits there exists today. But because of the cooperation, because of the relationships that we had built, through the community solutions approach that was outlined in New Directions, we now have a John Deere dealership, a successful one, in Wasco. We have an expanded urban growth boundary. We have pipes out there thanks to a grant from the department through the Special Public Works. They're smaller pipes thanks to flexibility by DEQ, and we have access to the highway thanks to some flexibility by ODOT, all in the interest of moving a project forward. So that's on a small scale how a community solutions approach works. What we're talking about here is on a larger scale, the partners that are all involved in economic development playing a part in trying to move a common agenda together before the legislature, so you don't get the bickering between groups that you may have heard here previously that you were referenced. So you see over on the left, I'm referring to this letter here that was handed out earlier. And this is the continuation of the efforts of the New Directions Task Force. After the New Directions report came out, there were some jurisdictions that had concerns about the implementation. And so these groups convened, sending their delegates to work out those difficulties through a series of summits under leadership of Sue Cameron of Tillamook County, Mike Jordan of, at that time, the city of Canby, and with the help and sponsorship of the governor's office and the departments, all the affected departments of the community solutions team. And we've continued that effort in a partnership called the Community Development Forum. We meet monthly. It's co-chaired by Steve Bryant of cities and myself for the counties. And we bring to the table any issues around community development that appear to be a problem so that when we come before you in the legislature, we have those things worked out. And one of the things we try to do is bring our own individual legislative agendas, each group, the associations and the governor's office and the departments, put their agendas on the table, and then we debate those and try to come to common agreement about what a legislative agenda should be. And we've done that, and here it is. And basically, we all agree that the proposal you'll hear from the department for bonding infrastructure makes sense. We think it's a good use of those lottery funds. It provides tremendous leverage. Just in the Lower John Day alone, we've identified through a regional assessment, $43 million worth of projects in 16 small cities. I provided Representative Smith with an analysis that the department did of the original needs assessment that's been done. And most of those cities don't have the resources to move those projects forward. I think there's over $800 million of need out there right now. And unfortunately, the article in Oregonian yesterday that talked about this characterized that as rural. And I believe that there's data here, and I've just been handed some data, which I think the department will get to the committee, showing that many of these infrastructure awards go to places far from rural. And to me, of course, rural is has a little different connotation than others might, but I don't think Hoos Bend is rural necessarily. But, you know, for instance, a $500,000 grant went to the Bend Airport for infrastructure. $500,000 went to Hillsboro Evergreen 229th Street for transportation improvements. And $500,000 went to the Rondler Acres Hillsboro project for infrastructure development. I think those are fairly, estimation, fairly urban development. So this isn't all about rural. It's about providing the infrastructure that's going to be needed. The other thing that that this fund does is that it revolves. It's a revolving loan fund. You set it up and it continues so that future needs can get addressed. It's also great leverage because rarely do you see an infrastructure project go forward with only one piece of funding in it, be it Oregon wastewater or special public works. They usually have three or four funding sources, EDA money, rural development money, local fee money, and so forth. So what you're doing with the 196 is probably leveraging a whole lot more. And I don't have the figures on what that would be. I think the department might be able to do that. So in other words, you see here those things that we partners in the Community Development Forum agree are important investments for the state of Oregon and are supported by the representatives of our associations there. Do you have any questions, Chair Butler, about this letter?
No, I don't. I appreciate the letter and I appreciate the work that's being done. You've continued on since the Economic Development Support Group was established in the interim in 1999. How is your group funded? Is it funded by the individual bits and pieces of the League of Oregon City, the ports, the association, the special districts?
There's no funding, Chair Butler.
So you have to fund it yourselves, basically.
Correct. I believe the department provides staffing, sends out notices of meetings and that sort of thing.
You participate as a member of the AOC in your case.
That's true. I represent AOC and other commissioners from other parts of the state also are members of this. And the great thing about it is what we see happening is the heads of those state agencies that are part of the Community Solutions team attend. So we get the Department of Transportation's new director attending our meetings. Bill, of course, Director Scott attends, Director Repine attends, Stephanie Halleck of DEQ attends. They participate, and so if we have issues, if something comes up through the Association of Counties, and I've got a problem with something that Department of Transportation is doing, I can bring it up at a community development forum, and we can have a discussion about it, and all the partners can weigh in on that. And whenever new ideas come up, we can bring them up and test them at this forum. So it's really a state community solutions team approach to problem solving. One of the things that I think is great about the way this system's working now, and I said it sort of tongue-in-cheek in the past, but that local government was happy to facilitate the opportunity for state agencies to talk to one another. And essentially, that's what I'm seeing, especially at the regional level, is that they previously, local DEQ had no relationship to local ODOT. I asked both directors. They didn't talk to one another, had no reason to. Now they go to these community solutions team regional meetings, and when an issue comes up relative to runoff off a highway or a pipe under a road, they know each other and have a relationship and can work out the problem and rather than stopping the project because one or the other of them doesn't understand it.
They attend. Are you speaking now of ODOT Director Bruce Warner attends with Stephanie Halleck from DEQ?
At this community development forum,
right.
They attend there, but then at the local level, at our regional and partnership level, we get the local representatives of ODOT and DEQ and housing and so forth.
And ODOT, Judge MacArthur, and ODOT, I think there's a budget note that says that decision-making authority will be delegated down to the lowest level at which a decision can be made and getting that accomplished. This is part of one of the concerns, I think, that we've got throughout all of the budgets and throughout many of the substantive committees, that in the community solutions process, it seems like we're having to go each session a notch higher and a notch higher in order to find someone and who is invested and viewed sufficient power and authority to make the decisions. And this is of concern. The further we go along, the more we realize that, and I think it was the Department of Transportation which actually made the statement that it was that metal management just didn't have the appetite to allocate out to less than metal management any authority to make decisions at the lesser level. What's your immediate experience throughout all of the state relative to ODOT, housing, DEQ? Are they allocating down to the lower common denominators, just to their counterparts that can help?
Mr. Chair, due respect, I've seen an improvement in that delegation. Obviously, the directors of those state agencies that are involved in the community development process are, I think, very invested and believers in this system and way of doing business. I find that the people that attend our local meetings are eager to be flexible and provide more authority. Those that are less exposed to this way of doing business are in fact the middle management. But as this system becomes established, I think those folks are becoming more comfortable with it, learning and feeling like it's okay for them to delegate more authority down to the local and regional level people, so that we can have that drive it down to lowest level sort of decision making that you're talking about. That's okay. I'm seeing improvements.
Two issues have arisen in this process. One, the somewhat tongue-in-cheek comment was that now those people can say no faster. And the second comment is that it appears that most of the easiest problems that could be solved, in other words, the ones that they should have been saying yes 2 years ago, have all been pretty much solved. It's just tougher ones now that are coming up. What would your be response to the second?
Well, Mr. Chair, somewhat facetiously, one of the things I said was now that we meet with five state agencies or six at one time, it's easier for them to gang up on the local officials. I haven't found that to be the case. What I've found to be the case is that because of the fact that a certain issue is aired before multiple state agencies, there's a certain amount of peer pressure to be reasonable. And that when state agency folks are judged by other state agency folks, essentially their peers, that they're more likely to be flexible. And the whole philosophy of the program is solving problems and not running programs. So we find that the state agency folks are more focused on the problem and helping the community solve that problem.
Are there any further questions, or I had to ask you a question regarding the bonds, Mike. I know you got under the Livability Initiative 21st Century Community Fund, a whole batch of items here. I assume these are being brought on behalf of the group of the League of Oregon Cities, the Oregon Torch Authority, the Association, and AOC, and the Special Districts. Did you want to reference anyone or all of these specifically?
Mr. Chair, this package of investments are those that are endorsed by the Community Development Forum. We think they make sense. They're good for Oregon, and hope that the legislature will see the wisdom of those investments as well. I particularly want to comment on the regional rural investment funds, which I think, as I began to comment earlier, are some of the best leverage funds that are delivered to the community. What you're doing with those funds is you're leveraging citizen participation, as I alluded to earlier, And I think another thing that those funds help do is solve the problem that Representative Johnson was beginning to speak to, or at least ask me about earlier when we were testifying, and that is a local capacity problem. In the Lower John Day, we're using rural investment funds to put somebody in place in each of our four or five partners. Each county and the tribes of Warm Springs has what we call a capacity building position that's funded by the rural investment funds. I mean, it's great to have these infrastructure funds, but if you don't have somebody to write the grant, how are you going to get the money? And that became apparent to me in my career in community development when the first project I took on was the big sewer project, which had languished for years without any progress. And I went to rural development, the USDA rural development, to find out how we could get funding for that project. And they gave me a form, 2 pages long, single-spaced, that was a list of all the forms that had to be filled out in order to qualify.
Written in Hebrew, right?
Well, to me at the time, it might as well have been. However, I found a way and pulled together some funding to hire somebody to work for our county. And it's that issue of capacity that we've determined that has to be overcome by particularly the most rural jurisdictions to be able to play in the game with those who are better set up and those organizations that have staff to be able to pursue those opportunities. And when people are trained and know where the funding is and know how to go get it, then you're more successful. And that's what we're trying to do, and we're leveraging these rural and regional investment funds to give us that capacity to allow us to go after new types of funding at the federal level, even, that weren't identified previously.
Thank you. I apologize for being outside when you probably answered the question that I asked. I think that you have touched on one of several issues that are worrisome to me, the competitive nature of some of these grants, and also the type and the quality of the grants. I have a lot less trouble with large infrastructure grants, and I'm asking for your reaction when I get done sharing this with you. I have a lot less trouble with large infrastructure grants that are water and sewer and crumbling real infrastructure. Representative Smith was talking about pipes that are wood pipes wrapped in tar paper, than I do about some of the other elements of the grant making that goes on at OEDD that are beautiful. Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair, Reagan Economic and Community Development. that are a lot more along the lines of some of the downtown development issues, a la revitalization of downtowns. Given that you're steeped in the process, do you have a reaction about the comparative value between doing sewer and water and hard infrastructure and some of the other, what I really consider lighter weight grants, particularly some that are enumerated in the needs and issues book that are to fraternal organizations or private entrepreneurial efforts?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I agree with your priorities as I think I understand them, that, and those are our priorities locally, that water and sewer, telecommunications, those sorts of that sort of infrastructure ought to be that which is funded first. There are other community facilities that are near equal importance that shouldn't be ignored, in particularly building the livability of a rural community that hopes to attract a new industry or business. And I would put in that category things like ambulance shelters, fire halls, health clinics, assisted living facilities. Those are the types of community facilities that, as I understand it, we're looking to fund through loans primarily, except for those small projects that need a bit of gap finance to close it. The story of the ambulance at Spray parked in the field, that you had to go jump start it in order to be able to use it until they got a community facilities funding to be able to build a shelter where they could keep it warm. I think those are the next level of magnitude of priority. As far as downtown development, I'm frankly not aware of a lot of grants going for those types of renovations through these programs that I'm used to working with. Perhaps one of the other technical folks here could talk about what the downtown development program is and how grants are accessed through that, but I'm not aware of much.
You really answered my question. Just to put a finer point on it, the competitive nature of these programs, do you think that's a healthy thing, where you've got poor old spray that, we've been picking on spray. We love spray.
That's okay.
Poor old spray that does not have a sophisticated grant writer versus somebody like Steve Bryant from the city of Albany, very sophisticated, and knows the process well. How do you equalize the opportunities for the sprays of the world to get a fair shot at having their projects on the list? My sense is that there is great inequity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, you developed the capacity at Spray. And as a matter of fact, Wheeler County has a very sophisticated grant writer at this time, funded through the Rural Investment Program. And I would put that person up against Steve Bryant any day.
Good. I'm delighted to hear that. I really am. I was citing Spray believing that they didn't, so I'm very gratified to hear Spray's got a guardian angel.
I'm speaking, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, of Lynn Craig of Wheeler County Economic Development. In our region, the county's capacity builder slash economic development person works with all the city clerks and helps them work through these processes. If not, does it may just do it for them. But we try and teach the city clerks how to work through these grant processes, and whether it be community development block grant or water, wastewater, or special public works. We're trying to build that capacity through other ways, and part of that's one thing I'd like to comment, Mr. Chair, if I may digress a little bit into another area you may be covering today or later on in this budget, and that's the local capacity. A lot of times you need to develop people in order for a community to move forward. And the only way to do that is often through leadership training and planning services. And there aren't very few contractors out there doing that kind of work. One that I've become associated with is Rural Development Initiatives, which is a contractor with the department, which was originally created by the legislature and has a contract to do certain types of work for the department, also does all types of other work on contracts throughout rural Oregon. You need somebody who can come in who has experience to be able to provide the leadership training and the capacity building that is necessary in small communities to develop the human infrastructure. And I think RDI does a good job of that. I didn't always feel that way. In fact, I was a skeptic of RDI when I first heard about them. They came and talked to me, and I told them to go away, that I didn't need their help, especially with the attitude they had at that time. Now I'm the board chair. Thanks to, I was recruited by then Deputy Director John Jaqua to that position after I had declined their services, became involved with that board, and I think that the direction of RDI has changed remarkably. We have a wonderful board now, including significant private sector folks from Pacific Core, Mike Forster, the Capital Press. We connect OSU through the Dean of Extension, Lila Hoglum. We have the Director of Rural Development, Lynn Schussler, on the board. We have Cities, Wes Hare, Greg Ellis of Independence. Well-rounded board, and we're doing some really exciting things. And regional development has staff in all parts of the state and new staff that I think are really sensitive to rural communities, and I think they do a good job and play an important role in this whole scheme of economic and community development.
I'd like to ask, I guess, maybe a philosophical question and ask also that nobody from rural Oregon throws a rock at me or something.
You're sitting between two of them.
Oh, and I know there's others in the room.
I've got a pretty good aim.
Part of me thinks that there are some rural communities that need a hand up, that for whatever reason they're struggling. They've got a lot of good economic infrastructure around them, and that's where the state can step in and give them the hand up. I sense that there's probably other communities out there where the economic base has gone away, that for whatever reason, the reason that community originally existed just doesn't exist anymore. Things have moved on, and I think the history of the American West is replete with examples of moving where the mine is hot or whatever, and towns do move. And I'm wondering if there's ever a consideration that there are some communities where there simply is not an economic base that will be sustaining in the long run, and that for the state to go in and put in all the infrastructure and housing and everything else is sustaining a community that is unsustainable on its own.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ringo, would you like me to respond to that?
Please.
Philosophical argument. Interestingly enough, in the report that Representative Smith has, two of the projects, two of the infrastructure projects that were scoped, the conclusion was that they were, it was not feasible for the state to invest there. And one was Lone Rock in Gillum County, and one was Shanika. The population's so low, the investment would have to be so high that using the traditional ways of doing things didn't make sense. I think what you really have to look at is, what do the people in that community want? And then if the state investment is too high to justify the return, if you can't make the economic business market, business analysis there, business case, then you have to find another way. And there are other ways. And one of them is a self-help project. I'm not sure if you're familiar, Mr. Chair, Representative Ringo, with community self-help as a model. There's an engineering firm, actually, it's located here in Oregon, that works with communities who have volunteers that will, they'll dig the ditches with their own backhoes. And then some engineer will oversee and make sure the pipes get put together right, so they don't have to go out to bid and hire the most lowest bid as a contractor, who's not going to be very low bid because they're so rural and remote. So I think it goes back to, what does the community want? Does the community want to exist and survive? And then if so, how can we help them? But within the context of making the state investments go to the places that make the most sense.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson's right here.
Who is that engineering firm? I'd like the opportunity to give them the public accolade of recognizing what they're doing.
Mm. Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I can't recall it right now, but we'll get that name for you.
Please proceed.
Was there further information you wanted to share with us, Mike?
Only that, just to reiterate, and this is maybe the only time I get to speak to you about the department and what we're trying to accomplish in the community development budget. But the legislature asked us to go out and take a hard look at how this business is done after 97. We did that and came back in 99 with what seemed to be a program that people were supportive of. They thought that made sense. That program, because it was brand new, we went out and formed a number of new regions, different boards, different approaches, different ways of doing things. Our region in particular has taken a very long-range look at this. We get about $1.4 million from regional rural investment, and you could dump $1.4 million into three or four projects, and it isn't going to change the fundamental economy of our region, and that's what we're trying to do. Agriculture is not very strong, and that's what we're based on right now. So we need to do something different, and so we're taking a much longer range approach to building capacity, leveraging that little bit of money into something that really makes sense. We're doing things like leveraging $50,000 to Wheeler County to try and get $8.2 million from the federal government for the Thomas Condon Visitor Center. And we think we have a good chance of doing that. And then another $2 million for a facility in Fossil that will attract visitors. So that's federal money. So we're trying to leverage federal money to help improve the economy in different ways, rather than just fund some projects directly.
Senator, Representative Johnson.
Maybe this is a question to Mr. Scott. I applaud that. There are some federal programs, particularly for aviation, that come in nine federal dollars to every one local, and I think the concept of leveraging is great. I sat in and watched our regional board in the area that I come from make grants. Pure and simple, make grants. And they got lobbied very heavily by some influential person, and boom, $50,000 to their pet project. I didn't see any wrestling with the idea of leveraging. And the question I guess that I've got, Bill, is how are these boards trained? How are they made conscious of the need to leverage? Who's responsible for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I guess I'd say there are two main sources. One is that the department conducts, maybe every year, but at least every biennium, we do a variety of trainings or central
meetings where we invite regional board members to come and basically share with each other what they're doing and provide them with training in the structure of the program and its workings. The other is that I would say probably they get most of their training from the organizations that they hire to support them, is up to them what they do, and it's up to them, you know, how much input of what kind they get, but they have the opportunity to, I guess I would say, have a fairly sophisticated level of staffing if they choose to do that. The philosophy of this program that has, I guess I would say, continually moved in the direction of less state control since it began. The philosophy has been, and I guess I would say my philosophy is that the folks on these the county commissioners who appoint the boards and the folks who are appointed to the boards are just as smart as we are and have the same values, and we try to provide them with information that makes it possible for them to do their jobs. But we have run into, I guess I would say, tremendous resistance to what people view as us being directive or us second guessing the judgments of the leadership at that level. So,
well, I've said it before and I'll say it again just so I maintain consistency on the record. The fact that 6 out of the 9 board members in our region were involved as candidates in the last election cycle is profoundly worrisome to me when grants are being made locally. And the fact that in the last round of grants that I personally observed, there was no attempt to leverage. And I, at least it wasn't discussed. Now, maybe I missed something behind the scenes. That's entirely possible, and I want to give the benefit of the doubt. But these have the appearance of being grace and favor grants. I don't know whether there are standard agency guidelines that say there should be terms of service, and these are not appointments for life. There are lots of good people in a county where they're in Columbia County, 37,000 souls. There have got to be more than just a handful of people that are eligible for service on those boards. And I'm curious whether or not the state gives any guidance on how do you mix up the composition of your regional boards.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, there was some pretty extensive discussion prior to and during the last legislative session and as part of the whole interim work group with the Association of Counties around the issue of the makeup of these boards. The outcome of that was to essentially trust the counties.
Okay. One last question.
Follow-up.
As long as I have the chair of RDI here, are you aware of any instances where travel has occurred, county travel paid by counties and then reimbursed by RDI?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, no.
Would that be consistent with your guidelines if that were happening?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the policies of RDI basically don't compensate counties for participation. There's some compensation for board members' travel, but I'm not aware of any for any other types of outside travel, unless they were working on behalf of an RDI program, perhaps.
What, for example, might take an RDI board member to Washington, D.C.?
There might be some reason to gather information or to work on some particular project, but Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not aware of board members being traveling to Washington, D.C. And being funded for that.
Mr. Chair, would it be possible for you to get me a list of any RDI reimbursement to counties for board travel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson,
assuming it exists.
I'd be happy to investigate that.
Thank you.
Pursuant to Representative Johnson's questions, What is the criteria local areas use in allocating funds? What's the criteria?
Mr. Chair, Representative Senator Yee, that is set forth to some degree in statute in terms of the general policies under which investments can be made. But the next step is that each region adopts an investment plan, and the investments should follow the plan in terms of being consistent with whatever objectives the region decides are important for that region. So there's great variance in the state about what certain regions believe are important to their area. So
I understand the statutory guidelines is for economic opportunities. So what does economic opportunities mean? Does that mean jobs creation?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, in the long run, it means increased community viability to me, which economic opportunity through jobs is certainly an important factor. In some communities, like the region I come from, the potential of attracting jobs is so remote that we're attempting to build the infrastructure up so that if something does come along, we at least are able to handle it. We have to set the table, if you will, or in some way improve our visibility and improve our attractiveness to attract business because of the fact that we're so remote and rural. So some areas have a better opportunity to attract pure jobs than others, and so others must lay more groundwork. So it depends on where you are.
Follow-up question.
Follow-up, Senator Yee.
So building infrastructure, is this to help facilitate an immediate opportunity for industrial siting, or is it for quality of water? If it's improving quality of water, shouldn't that be handled by health department, who has all the standards, or DEQ, who has all the standards? Why is it being handled by economic development department?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, it depends on the program. In terms of the Safe Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund, that's a partnership between the DEQ, or Department of Health, excuse me, and the Economic Development Department. Economic Development Department has the experience in working through the infrastructure grant process. Department of Health has the experience in providing the standards of drinking water. So in that particular program, there is a partnership involving health. In any infrastructure program involving wastewater or water, DEQ is a partner. DEQ is very much involved in the design, review of the plans, and makes certain that they meet the standards that will allow and ensure safe drinking water and safe disposal of those wastewaters. Where the department's expertise really comes in is in the administration of the financing of those. So I think you'll see a partnership in almost any project like that goes forward of all those agencies.
Well, follow up. I just want to say if the objective is clear that this is for creation of jobs, there would be less arguments about which project should be awarded. If the mission of the department is for creation of jobs, then there shouldn't be too much problem in awarding which projects should be given the funds. I mean, I hear what Representative Johnson is saying, that she's concerned that there could be favoritism be played in awarding those grants. But if there's a clear objective, then there shouldn't be too much problem in making those decisions.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I believe that creation of jobs is one of the clear objectives that we have in our community development programs, and that's certainly one of our goals.
Probably an analysis of that should be done before the awarding of the projects. And then at the end of the project, verification of those projected jobs should be made so we know that our funding is spent for the purpose of the department.
Chair Butler.
Representative Smith, I beg your pardon.
Thank you. I think a lot of these projects are done not only for economic development, but also for community development. Let me give you an example. In the community of Lexington in Morrow County, they have a water system that doesn't have a loop. And so what happens is the water runs to the end of the pipe, it dead ends, and it could sit there, and it could stagnate. And during low water times during the year, if your home happens to be at the end of the loop, your home may go without water. And I think the department takes into consideration not only job creation, but also community standards and way of life. And I'm not quite sure rural Oregon, because they're small, should have to live in a community that doesn't have water year-round.
You're right.
I think that's a very real issue.
But on the other hand, I thought this should be handled by Health Division or DEQ, who understands the standards of water or the system much better than economic development parts.
I don't think I disagree with you on that. The one thing I'd point out, though, is unfortunately the way the system is set up, so many of the dollars that this department accesses, they partner with federal agencies that don't operate under those guidelines. Rural development and EDA, they put dollars in partnership with the department into our communities. And so while maybe it's not an ideal fit, it is a fit that works and that the feds like to work with as well.
Why shouldn't it just be a direct pass-through, though? If it's building water systems, following on Senator Yee's line of thought, the money might come to OEDD and then just be a pass-through to the folks that build water systems or build houses, if it's a housing kind of grant. I think that's the model now, that you pass through the housing money, don't you?
I'd be more than willing to take a shot at that. I think the state serves as a catalyst for leveraging those dollars. And we mentioned Lynn Craig and Spray, who has the ability to write the grants, but she doesn't per se know what all the grants are out there. And the department provides an excellent resource for figuring out what EDA dollars or rural development dollars can be brought in with special public works dollars or with CDBG community development block grant dollars to maximize leverage. And then the department also has excellent experience working with local community lenders to provide construction loans before the projects are finished. And so I think a pass-through, while on the surface makes a lot of sense, I think we'd be leaving a lot of dollars on the table.
Mr. Chair, if I may, let me briefly describe how it works when a community decides it needs infrastructure improvements. What happens is that community works with its local regional economic development officer from the department. They set up what's called a one-stop. And at the one-stop, you have all the agencies that have money, rural development, if they're a player, DEQ will be there, the department will be there, CDBG will be there, and so on. And those folks meet together to decide whose money best fits that project. So it's usually a blend of funds, mix of money, a mix of expertise. It's a very cooperative approach to getting these projects done in the most efficient way possible. Sometimes job creation is way down the road in terms of getting a community ready, like in rural eastern Oregon. Job creation, you can't count on it happening quickly. But so it's hard to measure. Sometimes it's going to take a long time to get those jobs. But you have to be ready for them to even have a chance.
Well, I think the existence of the department is for creation of jobs. So we made it very clear we can see what kind of result, what kind of return on investment we are making. And the public works, I agree we need them, but it can be much better handled by departments with expertise in the standards and in the system. While we can pursue this issue further, Mr. Chairman, I have to go to another question.
Senator, thank you very much. And we're going to be losing Ms. Black or Ms. Lamont as well, so we're going to go ahead and gavel this to a close. Thank you very much.
I was ready to stay till 6:30.
You were going to do that. Thank you. Thank you very much.